We're on Lamed Vav, Amid Beis, five lines up from the bottom, where it says, Melamda Medrash Halachos V'Agados. Our Mishnah stated that if a person was prohibited by neder, so let's say, for example, Reuven was prohibited by neder to have any benefit from Shimon, Halacha is, Melamda Medrash Halachos V'Agados. Shimon would still be permitted to teach Reuven Torah, specifically any of the branches of Torah Shebal Peh, the understanding of the written Torah that we have received through tradition from Har Sinai. Reuven's receiving that from Shimon would not be a violation of the neder, although certainly gaining an understanding of the Torah is of eternal benefit. It's Eilu Dvarim She'ein Lahem Shiur, as we learn in Peah, and Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Obviously, there is infinite value in meriting to understand the Torah. However, in the final analysis, coming to an understanding of the Torah is a mitzvah. And we have a principle that the mitzvahs were not given in the form of a hana. It's not like eating ice cream. It's not considered a halachic hana. It's not the same as Shimon handing Reuven $500. Again, even though, spiritually speaking, it's worth much more than that. So basically, the Mishnah rules Shimon can teach Reuven Gemara or any Yetar Shebal Peh, and that won't violate the nether. However, the Mishnah says Shimon may not teach Reuven Mikra, the Psukim, basic reading of the Psukim, that would be a violation of the nether. So what's the difference? So when we read the Mishnah, we began to discuss the point that, okay, maybe imparting the Torah knowledge itself is not deemed a halachic hana. What about the fact that Shimon is not charging Reuven for his services? So that is the issue here. So if Shimon is gratis, so without charging any fee, teaching Reuven how to read Psukim in Tanakh, well, that's, we consider that Shimon is giving Reuven a benefit, so it would be a violation of the nether. But this prompts the Gemara to ask the obvious question, okay, Mikra, Maitam Ali Lamdenu, why does Mishnah say Shimon can't teach Reuven Mikra, Mishum de Kamahani Le? It's because since Shimon isn't charging Reuven for his teaching services, he is benefiting him. So that's a violation of the ned there. But the question is, Midrash Nami Kamhani Lay. Then if Shimon is teaching in the area of Torah Shebal Peh as well, Midrash or Gemara, if Shimon isn't charging Reuven, then we should say in that case too, he's benefiting him, so it should be prohibited under the ned there. So how do we understand the Mishnah's distinction? The Gemara answers, Omer Shmuel, B'makum shenotlin schar al ha-mikra ve'ein notlin schar al ha-medrash. The Mishnah's teaching applies in a case where the local custom is to charge for teaching Mikra, just the Psukim, but not to charge when teaching the Torah Shebal Peh, the Medrash, Gemara, the received understanding of the Psukim of the Torah, and therefore, for Shimon to teach Reuven Mikra no charge, that would be giving Reuven a benefit. If Reuven would go to somebody else, he would have to pay. So Shimon's benefiting Reuven, therefore that's a violation of the ned there. Where it's not a problem for Shimon to teach Reuven Torah Shebal Peh, the Midrash, and no charge, because nobody in this place charges for that. Therefore, Shimon is not conferring any halachic benefit on Reuven, and doesn't violate the ned there. The Gemara asks, my Pascha, why would the Mishnah state the rule this way? Meaning the Mishnah very much implies that the distinction lies in the subject matter. Depends, is he teaching Mikra or Midrash? According to Shmuel's approach, however, it doesn't really seem to be a distinction between this or that area of Torah study, but rather the real distinction is whether it's normal for people to charge for the subject in question. Maybe in other places, the opposite, people charge for teaching Midrash, but not for teaching Mikra. So why would the Mishnah, according to Shmuel, give the impression that there's something about Mikra inherently that makes that, you know, not a violation of the Neder, something about Midrash, which does create a problem for the nether. Continuing to Lamed Zayin, the Gemara answers, Ha kamash melon, the afilu b'makom shenot lin schar, ala mikra shori lemishkal, ala medrash lo shori lemishkal. In fact, even according to Shmuel's approach, the distinction does lie in mikra versus medrash, for our Mishnah is teaching us what the educators are allowed to charge for. That is, the Mishnah is telling us, even in a place where the norm is for Torah teachers to charge, they may only do so when teaching Mikra and the Psukim themselves, but not when teaching Medrash. Therefore, the Mishnah says exactly the right words according to Shmuel. The Mishnah says that it it's not a problem for Shimon to teach Reuven Medrash because one is not allowed to charge for that. So since nobody charges for teaching that subject, there's no issue here that by Shimon teaching Reuven without charging, then that would be a violation of the nether. Gemara seeks to understand this distinction why one may charge for Mikra but not for Medrash. Gemara asks, Maishna Medrash the law, why is it not appropriate to charge for teaching Medrash? That's Rosh Baal Peh. Dichsiv, the Pasuk of Eschanan says, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Bnei Yisrael, V'osi tziva Hashem v'oisahi lalamed eschem. Hashem commanded me at that time, meaning at Kabbalah Satar Har Sinai, to teach you laws and statutes. So in other words, in this pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu says that Hashem commanded him to teach Bnei Yisrael the Torah. Oksiv, earlier, the pasuk there, it says, Moshe Rabbeinu said to the people, Re'e, limanati eschem chukim u'mishpatim ka'asher tzivani Hashem. Behold, I have taught you laws and statutes, as Hashem, my God, commanded me. We darshan from this language. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the people, Ma ani bechinam, afatem nami bechinam. Just as I was taught the Torah by Hashem himself for no charge, Hashem didn't charge me, so too, when you fulfill your respective duties to teach the Torah, you must do so for free. You cannot charge your customers, your students. So the Gemara says, this explains the Mishnah's premise that teaching Medrash is not something a person can charge for. The question is, Mikra Nami Bechinam. But by the same token, a person should not be permitted to charge to teach Mikra. Therefore, it should not violate the nether for Shimon to teach Mikra either. Regarding Mikra too, we should say, oh, nobody charges for that because you're not allowed to. So why is the Mishnah rule that, no, if Shimon teaches Reuven Mikra and don't charge, that would violate the nether? Because Shmuel says, people do charge for teaching Mikra. How do people have the right to charge for teaching Mikra? Represents two approaches to answer this question. Rav Omar Schar Shimur. Rav explains that a teacher teaching school children Mikra may charge, for we can justify that, is not charging for the actual teaching he's doing, but for his supervision of these school children. Specifically, when it comes to boys learning in the school, they have a tendency to wander outside and escape the classroom. So the Rebbe has to stand guard at the door. No, Yingele, you can't leave. So it's that supervision of the children, that service rendered, that the Rebbe may charge for. By contrast, students of Medrash will typically be older, won't require such supervision. They don't need to be babysat. Therefore, when it comes to teaching Medrash, we fall back on the standard rule that Hashem says, just as I taught my chukum and mishpatim for free, you too must teach those for free. More below, we'll note the problem that, assuming Reuven in our Mishnah's case is an adult who doesn't need to be watched, make sure he doesn't run away, why does the Mishnah assume that Shimon would have the right to charge Reuven for teaching him Mikra? So well, we'll discuss that problem. The other approach is, Rabbi Yochanan Omer Schar Pisak Tamim. Rabbi Yochanan explains that a person teaching Mikra may charge if he's not just teaching the basic meaning of the Psukim, but also how to properly lane the Psukim with the trup, the cantillation. Rabbi Yochanan argues that teaching the skill of how to lane the Psukim is not included in what the Pasuk is referring to when it says, Hashem says, you can't teach my chukim and mishpatim for a charge. Knowing how to lane the Psukim with the right melody is not included in chukim and mishpatim. Therefore, one may charge for that. And indeed, our Mishnah is referring to where typically people do charge. Therefore, for Shimon to teach Reuven Mikra, meaning not just Mikra, how to lane the Mikra too, at no charge would be a violation of the nether. The Gemara now raises the issue that we mentioned above with Rav's approach for the Mishnah. That is, Tanan, lo yelamdenu Mikra. Our Mishnah teaches that Shimon may not teach Reuven Mikra at no charge. The question is, Bish lama lamandi amr schar pisuk tamim, very good according to Rabbi Yochanan. Why are people in general permitted to charge for teaching Mikra? It's for teaching them how to properly lane the Mikra. Hainu de lo yelamdenu. Well, then that perfectly explains our Mishnah's ruling that it's prohibited for Shimon to teach Reuven the Psukim, meaning how to lane the Psukim and no charge. That would clearly be conferring a benefit upon Reuven. People normally charge for that. Elolamadi amr schar shimor. According to Rav, says the justification, the charge for teaching Mikra is for supervising the young students. He doesn't run out of the classroom. Seemingly, that approach can't work to explain our Mishnah. But the Gemara at this stage assumes that Reuven, in our Mishnah's case, is an adult. And so how could you suggest that Shimon, by teaching Reuven how to lane for free, is giving Reuven a halachic hanah, because he has the right to charge Reuven? What do you mean he has the right to charge Reuven? Goldel bar shimrahu? What, Reuven, this adult, needs babysitting? Shimon needs to stand guard at the door, make sure Reuven doesn't run out of the laning lesson? Of course not. There's no supervision factor here if Reuven is an adult. So we're back to the service Shimon is providing Reuven with is teaching him Torah. We said above, you're not allowed to charge to teach somebody Torah. Therefore, Shimon is not halachically benefiting Reuven here. So why should this be a violation of the neder, according to Rav? Our answer is for Rav, that b'katan katani. But the Rav will have to say that Reuven, who is prohibited by neder to benefit from Shimon, is a child. So Mishnah's ruling that Shimon can't give Reuven the child bar mitzvah lessons. He can't teach him how to lane without charging, for that would be a violation of the neder. But the Gemara objects to this approach. Let's see if that fits in the later part of the Mishnah, which states, Avol melamid es banav mikra. The Mishnah later states, Shimon would be allowed to teach Reuven's children mikra. Now, katan bar banim hu. So how does that fit with what's being suggested here, that Reuven is but a child, he's a minor? Would a child possibly have his own children? Of course not. So it doesn't appear to fit. The Gemara answers, according to Rav, we must say chasure mechsara, that there's some words missing. V'hachi ketani, here's the complete text of the Mishnah. The Mishnah first states the ruling that lo yilamdenu mikra. Shimon cannot teach mikra to Reuven. That is bikatan, if Reuven is a child. But then again, it's a service that Shimon would be permitted to charge for. So to render that service for free would be giving Reuven a benefit, would be a violation of the neder. Then you have to add some words that the Mishnah then says, Imhaya gadol, but if Reuven were an adult, melamdo lo ulebanav mikra, and Shimon could teach Reuven himself, because he anyway can't charge Reuven, so he's not giving Reuven any benefit by teaching him how to lane for free, and he could also teach Reuven's children how to lane, even if they require supervision, so that Shimon would have a right to charge for teaching them how to lane the psukim, so that you could argue, well, he's saving Reuven for the father, for Reuven. So isn't that the benefiting Reuven? But no, that's too indirect a benefit to be deemed a halachic benefit that would violate the nether. Mishnah therefore says that's fine. We're asked another question of Rav Meisvei. They challenge Rav from the following Braisa. Braisa states, Tinokos lo korin batchila b'shabbos. Children should not be given lessons on Shabbos, teaching them new material of psukim. Ela shonin barishon, but it's fine for them to do a review lesson, even if it's the first time they're reviewing psukim that they learned just once. And the Gemara initially understands that the issue here is a potential problem of schar Shabbos. As we're talking about, the children are going to their Rebbe, who's giving them a lesson in mikra and Shabbos, and the Braisa seems to say that if the Rebbe would teach them new material, then the payment that's eventually given to the Rebbe would be covering that lesson. He's doing work then that he is getting paid for. Therefore, that's forbidden on Shabbos. It's like engaging in commerce on Shabbos or close to that. Therefore, it's rabbinically forbidden. But the Braisa seems to say, if it's a review lesson, then you know the Rebbe is not working as hard. It's easier for the kids to cover that, you know, quick review session. And therefore, we say that when the Rebbe gets paid, the payment is not covering that lesson. And so you don't have an issue here of Schar Shabbos doing work on Shabbos for payment. The Gemara points out, Bishlam alamadi amr schar pisuk tabim. It's very good according to Rabbi Yochanan. What exactly does a Mikra Rebbe get paid for? It's for the fact that he's teaching the students not just the chukum mishpatim, the actual psukim, but how to properly lane them with the cantillation, the trump notes, Hainu, the Ein Karen, Matchila, B'Shabbos. Then we perfectly understand the Raisa's distinction. Then again, the Raisa says, you can't teach them fresh material at a lame psukim they've never seen before. For to accomplish that, the Rebbe's going to have to work hard to teach the children that. So that will be included in the kind of work that he does for payment. And therefore, that violates the rabbinic prohibition of Schar Shabbos, of doing work for payment on Shabbos. Whereas again, if it's a review lesson, they already basically know it, then we could say that when he receives payment later, it's not really for that lesson, so there's no Schar Shabbos violation. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, very good. We understand the Brisa's distinction. El Laman, the Amr Schar Shimor, but according to Rav, who says, why could a Rebbe of Mikra get paid? It's for his service of supervising the children, making sure they don't run away. What would be the basis for the Brisa's distinction? Amai in Karim Betchila, Veshabbos, Vamayshonim, Berishon. Why would we draw a distinction based on whether it's new or old material, when either way, Ha'ika Schar Shimor de Shabbos, the Rebbe equally has to serve as a Shomer, to stand guard and to make sure the kids don't run away. And so even if it's old material, it should not be permitted. It should be considered a work that he's doing for payment on Shabbos. The Gemara retorts, even if we go with Rabbi Yochanan's understanding, the Rebbe who teaches Mikra gets paid for teaching the children how to lane the psukim. There's still a problem with this Raisa, which is Schar Pisuk B'Shabbos Mi Asur. Should it ever be a problem for a Rebbe to continue teaching his Talmidim on Shabbos, even if the teaching he's doing earns him wages? The Gemara argues that should not be a problem at all. For Havlahi, considering the fact that the work he's doing on Shabbos to teach the children is swallowed up by the work he performs teaching the children through the rest of the week. Havlah Mishra Shari. In such a case, there's no rabbinic violation. The fact that the person is also doing work on Shabbos for which he's getting paid is not prohibited. The Tanya, as stated in the following Brisa. Brisa says, Hasocher sapoel lishmor satinok, lishmor sapora, lishmor sazroim. Somebody hires a worker to watch his child or his cow or his crops, and he's paying him per day. And as it happened, the person performed the service on Shabbos as well. Halacha is, ein nosalo schar Shabbos. He may not demand payment for the services he rendered on Shabbos. Rabbanan said this is too close to commerce. Therefore, it's prohibited to take payment exclusively for work that he did on Shabbos. The Raisa then says, lefichach, in light of this halacha, that he cannot accept any payment for the watching that he did on Shabbos, turning to Avid Beis, im avdu eino chayev b'achriyusa. In the case where he's watching the person's property, his cow or his crops, and then Geneva or Aveda occurred, it was stolen or lost. So in other words, he wasn't grossly negligent, and it wasn't totally unforeseeable either. The halacha is that the watchman will not be held responsible, he will not have to pay. For since he's watching this person's property for free, he'll be classified as Shomer Chinam, he's an unpaid watchman, and the rule of an unpaid watchman is that he is not liable in the event of Aveda, being where the object, the property got lost in a way that it wasn't due to serious negligence on his part. The Brisa continues, V'im haya schir Shabbos, schir Chodesh, schir Shana, schir Shavua, if, however, the worker in question entered into a longer-term contract, be paid by Shabbos. Shabbos doesn't mean the day of Shabbos, it means by the week, or by the month, year, or over a whole Shemitah period, 7 years. In that case, no silo schar Shabbos. He can demand payment even for the work that he does on Shabbos. This is the dispensation called Havlah. It essentially says that where he's not being paid exclusively for work that he did on Shabbos, it's payment for, let's say, a whole month. And over the course of that month, he also provided the service on Shabbosos. In that case, there's no prohibition. Fichach, as a result, imavdu chai b'achriyusa. If the property got lost due to Aveda or Geneva, meaning not to full negligence, the watchman will have to pay, for here he is deemed a Shomer Sachar. He's a paid watchman, who has a higher level of responsibility. He does have to pay for Geneva or Aveda. The point for our discussion is that the Brisa is clearly working with the dispensation of Havlah. And so the Gemara argues that in the case of the previous Brisa, where the Cheder Rebbe is teaching his students on Shabbos, there should never be a problem, even if he's doing the kind of work for which he is paid that shouldn't violate the issue of Schar Shabbos, for it will just be swallowed up in the payment he receives over, let's say, the whole month, if he is paid per month. And so even according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's not clear at this point why there should ever be an issue for the Rebbe to continue giving his Torah lessons on Shabbos. So the Gemara therefore says, hold it for an understanding of the Brisa. That is Elagabi Shabbos, Hainu Taima Dein Karm Batchila. Here's the actual reason why the Rebbe can't teach his students new material on Shabbos. Mishum Diyifnu Avashon Diyanoki Limitzvasa De Shabsa. It's to ensure that the fathers of these school children will be able to properly turn their attention to the mitzvah of the day of enjoying Shabbos. That is, if the children do a lesson of a brand new material, which would be much more involved, would probably take much longer, this might take away from the focus on enjoying Shabbos, like the father's going to wait for the kids to come from this difficult lesson of a new material, to the point that it will encroach on putting enough of proper focus and time on enjoying a nice sesuda, enjoying the day of Shabbos. Where it says, v'ibay seim, or you could explain, and the Braisa prescribes teaching them a lesson of new material, mishum de b'shabsa achlin v'shasin, because on Shabbos, children eat and drink more than they do during the week, they have heavier foods, as a result, v'yakir alein alma, it makes them lethargic, which is not the state they need to be in when tackling a new material. Yamar Shmuel says, Shinoi ves, techilas cholimayim, change of routine can bring on stomach ailments. So the point is that there's a physiological response to changing the diet. If it's a heavier diet on Shabbos, to a fancier kind of foods, it makes a person lethargic. And so better that time is spent reviewing the material, which is not as taxing as trying to understand brand new material. So the Gemara has defended Rav from these attempted refutations. The Gemara now considers why Rabbi Yochanan and Rav each did not go with the approach of the other, where first asks Ulamadi Amar Schar Pisuk Tamim, Rabbi Yochanan, who explained that a teacher of Mikra can accept payments for teaching the student how to lay the psukim. My time Ulam Amar Schar Shima, why didn't he explain like Rav that he is allowed to take payments for the service of supervising his students? Our answer is Kisavar Banos Mika Bayin Shimur. Yochanan didn't want to go with Rav's approach, for it wouldn't explain why a teacher of Mikra can accept payments even when teaching female students. Rabbi Yochanan asks rhetorically, do girls need watching? Only young boys will make an attempt to wander out of the classroom. To young girls, it's not really a problem, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan will point out that Rav's approach wouldn't explain why a person who's teaching girls Mikra would be permitted to accept payment for that. Gemara now asks, Ulamad Yomer Schar Shimor, my time alo Yomer Schar Pisak Tamim. Why didn't Rav want to explain like Rabbi Yochanan that a Mikra teacher may accept payment for teaching the student how to lay in the psukim? Amar answers, Rav did not go with the Rabbi Yochanan's approach because Kesavar Pisuk Tamim Daraisahu. Rav is of the opinion that the proper cantillation of the pasuk is part and parcel of the Torah itself, of what the Torah is referring to when it says, Chukim Mishpatim, and Hashem says, I taught you the Chukim Mishpatim for free, so too you must teach them for free. Included in Chukim Mishpatim is Pisak Tamim. This area of knowledge was literally given at Har Sinai with everything else, with the rest of the Torah. Therefore, just as a teacher of Mikra cannot charge for teaching the basic meaning of the Psukim, he also can't charge teaching his students the cantillation of the Psukim, what the proper trup is. For that too, again, was received at Har Sinai, where it says, the Amarav Ikka Bar Ovin Amarav Chananel Amarav, as is borne out from the following teaching, from Rav Ikka Bar Ovin Amarav Chananel Amarav. So in other words, Rav directly discussed this topic and stated clearly that Pisak Tamim is part and parcel of the Chukim Mishpatim of the Torah. It's not, this, so to speak, you know, in any way an extra thing that would provide an argument that the teacher of Mikra could charge for that. For Rav explained, Mai Dechsiv, what is the meaning of the Pasuk in Nehemiah, which states, Vayikra'u Vasefer, Mesoraso Elohim, Meforash, Visom Sechel, Vayavinu Ba Mikra. The Pasuk describes how Ezra HaSofer read Sefer Torah on Rosh Hashanah at the gate of Yerushalayim to the Jews who had returned from Babel back there to Israel in the era of Bais Sheni. The Pasuk uses different adjectives to describe the nature of this Torah reading. Rav Darshan's, these different terms that they allude to different layers, different aspects of understanding of the Torah. That is, Vayikru, Vasefer, Vesarasu Elokim. So that first phrase, they read in the scroll, Hashem's Torah, Zemikra, simply refers to the Psukim themselves. Then we have this adjective, Miforash, Psukim that were elucidated, Ze Targum. This is a reference to Targum, meaning Targum Unkelis, the Aramaic translation of the Torah from the original Hebrew to Aramaic. So meaning, when Ezra Sofer read from the Sefer Torah, it was also read to the people in Aramaic by a mitargim, a translator, who, as Ezra read, would call out the pasuk in Aramaic. With some sechel, and with an understanding. So what's this other layer of understanding? Eilu ha-psukim. These refer to the system of how the verses of the Torah are divided. So meaning Ezra Sofer stopped properly each time it was time to stop to mark the end of a pasuk. And then the phrase, Vayavinu ba-mikra, and they understood the reading, Ze pisuk tamim. This refers to the cantillation of the psukim, the various notes that go under the words, be it Nesnachta or Zakev Katon, Kadma, Mercha, etc. Different symbols, different notes that indicate for the reader how to sing, how to emphasize, how to pause. So the pasuk is saying that Ezra Sofer read from the Sefer Torah for the people with the proper trup. And how does the pasuk refer to Pisak Tamim? As Vayavino Bamikra, aided in their understanding of the pasuk. For indeed, the cantillation often influences the understanding of the pasuk. If you pause or emphasize here or there, that could substantially influence the pasuk's meaning. So this strongly supports Rav's position that cantillation is part and parcel of the Torah all along, for it guides us as to the correct understanding of the psukim, where it says, Rami la others darsh and ve'evinu ba'mikra differently, that it refers to Eilu ha-misoros, that is, a tradition as to how many of the words in the Torah should be spelled. And more specifically, the Torah, of course, is not written with nekudos, so you don't have the vowelization signs in the Torah, but it's possible to use the letters to indicate how to pronounce the word. A yud can indicate a chirik, to make an e sound. A vav can indicate to make a cholim sound, or a shuruk sound. Finally, a hey could indicate that there should be a patach there, a komatz. So sometimes the pasuk will do that. It will spell the word in the full way, so to speak, meaning it will use one of the letters we mentioned to indicate how the word is to be vowelized. But sometimes not. Sometimes the pasuk will spell the same word with the chaser spelling. And of course, we just know through tradition how to properly pronounce the word. So in this other approach, the phrase Ve'evinu ba-mikra is saying that Ezra Sofer's Sefer Torah had all the appropriate misoros. It used the full or the truncated version of the word where appropriate based on tradition. Where continues on this topic, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak said, Mikra Sofrim. The body of knowledge regarding how to read, how to, you know, put the vowels, pronounce from words in the Torah, Ve'itzer Sofrim, in all of the instances when a word in the pasuk is added just for aesthetic purposes, Ve'karyon V'loksivan, in all the instances where a word is read when reading from the Torah, but the word is not written in the Sefer Torah itself, or conversely, Uksivan V'lokaryon, cases when word is written in the Sefer Torah, but word is not read, sometimes at all, sometimes it's read in a different way. All of these are halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, were received by Moshe Rabbeinu at Har-Sinai. They are a part of the Torah Shebaal Peh, and have been preserved by the Sofrim, the great Torah scholars. We're going to provide some examples of each of these categories. So first of all, regarding Mikra Sofrim, that sometimes a word is pronounced differently, even though the letters in the Torah are the same. So, for example, the Bach here, you know, adds the first two Eretz with, you know, Segel, Eretz, but sometimes it's pronounced Aretz, and that is when the word appears at the very end of a pasuk, or has an Esnachta symbol under it indicating that there's a pause, there's the end of a phrase. It's then pronounced Aretz, and similarly, Shomayim and Mitzrayim, those words may instead be pronounced Shomoyim, Mitzrayim, Again, if they're at the end of the pasuk, so you have a sof pasuk underneath, or nesnachta. And regarding this category of iter sofrim, where a word is added for aesthetic purposes, just to, you know, contribute to the poetic beauty of the phrase, and not to the meaning that's being conveyed. For example, achar tavoru. The pasuk in Vayera, Avraham found the travelers, the malachim, he beckoned them, they should come, have a little bit of bread, and satisfy yourselves, achar tavoru, and then pass on, you can continue on your journey. Or the pasuk in Chayisara, which Rivka's mother, and brother Lavan, implored Eliezer, the servant of Avram, not to take Rivka to go to Yitzchak, to marry Yitzchak right away. Rather, they appealed to Eliezer, saying, let her remain with us for a year, at least 10 months, and achar telech, then she will go. Where at the end of Baloscha, the pasuk discusses Miriam's punishment of Tzaraz for saying Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem said that she shall be isolated outside of the camp, and then achar teosef, then she can be brought back into the camp. All these cases, the word achar, then, isn't strictly necessary. Yet the word is included to give the statement more balance, where you say, this thing shall happen first, and then something will follow. The word then is only there for aesthetic purposes. Or, for example, this time from the Ksuvim, from Tehillim, it says, Kidmu Sharim Achar Nognim, first went the singers, then the musicians, when the pasuk could have just said, Kidmu Sharim Nognim, which would carry the connotation that the singers preceded the musicians. Yet the pasuk chose to add this word Achar to give the language, the wording, more elegance. Another example from Tehillim, the pasuk Tzidkasacha Kaharerei El. So, the Gemara is pointing out that the ke prefix, your righteousness is as the mighty mountains, wasn't strictly necessary, could have just said Tzidkasacha Harerei El. Just like pasuk there goes on to state that Mishpatecha Tehom Rabbah, your judgments are a Tehom Rabbah, it's vastly deep, there's no ke there. But the ki regarding Harei El is added for aesthetic purposes. The Gemara now gives examples of Karin Veloksivan, the words that are read when you're reading the section, let's say, for the Haftarah or part of Kriya Satara, even though the word is not written in the scroll itself. So, for example, we have Paras the Belechto. The word Pras is read in the Pasuk Shmuel Beis, even though that word doesn't appear in the Pasuk itself or in the text. Or another example from Shmuel Beis, the word Ish, the Kasher Yishal Ish, B'divar Elokim. And we read the word Ish in that pasuk, even though that's not in the text itself. Or in Yirmiyah, the word Bayim, Deniv Nisa, the word Bayim, pasuk there. And we do read when it's read aloud, even though that's not in the text either. Or another example from Yirmiyah, the word La, De Pleita, there's a word La, even though that's not in the pasuk there. Or S, the Hugeid Hugad. In the pasuk in Rus, we read aloud the word S in the pasuk there, or mentions Hugeid Hugad, even though the S is not in the text of the pasuk. It should be noted that in the accepted version of Megillas Rus that we have today, the word S, the question, is both read and written. All these issues we defer to the work of the Balia Masara, the Masoretes, which is a group of scholars comprised of Lena Marayim, early Gaonim, who, you know, compiled all of the different, you know, Krieg sieves, all of the things we've been discussing here. So their compilation is the authoritative text for all of these issues of the correct version of Tanakh, how that's read, how the text should appear. And so if there's a discrepancy, as we have here, between what the Gemara says versus what the Bali Masora's work states, we defer to the latter. Right, gives another example, also from Megillas Rus, the word Eli, the Agoren, that Rus said to her mother-in-law, Nami, everything you say Eli to me, I will do. That word Eli is read when we read Megillas Rus aloud, but it's not actually written in the text. Also, in Rus there, the word Eli in the pasuk of the Asaorim, Rus is saying, he gave me these 6 measures of barley, where it says, Halein, Karin, Veloksivan, all of these are examples of words that are read aloud, like when we read it in Shul, for the tzibur, but they're not written into the text itself. The word presents uksivan melokaryan. Following words are written but not read. We have the word na, which means please, the yislach, in Pasuk in Melachim Beis. It's written, it says, please forgive, but when we read it aloud, we don't say the word na. Continuing to Lamed Ches, we now presents an example from the Chumash itself, from Vizchanan. The word is zos de ha-mitzvah. So the Gemara is saying that when it says there, zos ha-mitzvah, the word zos is written but is not read. But the Ran points out that in R. Sefer Torah it says vizos ha-mitzvah, and that is not only written but is also read. So we don't go with this one. Also, the word yidruch da dorech. The word yidruch appears for a second time in a pasuk in Yirmiyah. That second yidruch is written but not read. And chamesh defas negev. The third time that the word chamesh appears in a pasuk in Yecheskel, describing the dimensions of the third base of Migdash. So that, again, is written but not read. And the word im de ki goel. The word im if in the ki goel pasuk in Rus. Halein, Ksiva, Lokarin, all of these are written but not read. And so the key point for our discussion is that all of these matters were transmitted to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. As a result, the Rav argues that if there's a rule that says the Rebbe can't charge for teaching the Chukim and Mishpatim of the Torah, the actual contents of the Torah, that prohibition will apply to Pisik Tamim, to the proper cantillation of the Pasik, for that too is part and parcel of the Chukim and the Mishpatim of the Torah.
Been listening to realclaredaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.